Welcome, welcome. I am Juma, and this is my co-host, Dr. Sophia Lin, and we are Leaf Style, where education, culture, and cannabis collides. Today, we have a really special guest, two special guests. One, Mr. Mike James, University of Miami standout, running back for the Hurricanes, 4 years in the NFL, the first NFL player to ever apply for the therapeutic exemption, and the vice president of Line Order. Welcome, Mike James. And we also have Boo Williams, standout tight end, born and raised Florida, a cannabis advocate, cannabis consumer, and today he's going to be able to speak a little bit about his journey in the NFL, dealing with various injuries and how cannabis became a part of his wellness program. So we'd like to give both of these gentlemen a real big hand here. And also, Dr. Sophia Lin, please begin.
Absolutely. Let's get right into it, gentlemen. So good to have both of you today. It's an absolute pleasure. Mike, tell me when your journey with cannabis began.
So my journey with cannabis began shortly right after my rookie year. I broke my ankle. I developed a dependency on opiates. I used cannabis as a medical thing to wean me off of those opiates. And shortly after that, I played, five more years in the NFL. I got to Detroit. And that's when I challenged the league on their medical marijuana policy, trying to get somewhat of a program, and it brought to the attention and it off the banned substance list.
Absolutely. So when you say you challenged the NFL's policy at that time, what was the NFL's stance on cannabis for players?
So the NFL's stance was really players could not use cannabis for any reason. There was no ifs, ands, buts about it. There was no exceptions to the rule. We had to be under 30 nanograms a milliliter for the annual test, which is very difficult. Anybody who knows CVS or Walgreens, their test is 50 nanograms a milliliter. So we were asked to do more than the general public to medicate if we chose to medicate in a more natural fashion. So I challenged them on that policy, looking to have marijuana recognized as a medicine and it taken off the banned substance
Absolutely.
List.
Absolutely. What year would you say this was?
This was around 2016, 2017.
I can't say we appreciate how NFL has come full circle in recognizing CBD and THC now that they have increased their amount to 150 nanograms as of April this year, right? So they've expanded a little bit more, and they've also eliminated testing during that preseason kind of time frame. What did they say to you when you petitioned that?
Well, it was a rigorous process. It wasn't just a clean cut, no. We went through a lot of legality things with my lawyers and their lawyers, and we had to go through arbitration to figure out, you know, what could we do about this. Shortly after the arbitration, I was informed that the policy wouldn't change, but, you know, leading into the new CBA and right after I kind of finished up with all of my things, the policy changed right after that. So it was comforting to know that my family, my friends, people that I grew up with and that are playing now and, you know, for the future of the game, that are trying their best and they're making strides to make it better, you know, from what they know,
Absolutely.
From what they can.
And do you feel... And do you feel what you sort of provided actually had an effect on that policy?
Yeah, I really feel like it did. You know, from something that I did differently from guys prior to me or any other player prior to me was I tried to go through the league's process to get it recognized. You know, I went through their own process, which they use for Adderall and other things, to get it recognized. So I was trying to basically use something within the league. I was not trying to buck the system. I wasn't trying to go behind their backs and do anything. I have Dr. Sue Sifley as my primary care physician, Dr. Sanjay Gupta, Brian Marescu as my lawyer. And we went in there with a wellness program. I mean, well vetted out. I was totally cool with being monitored with my use and everything, just to draw out something so there can be some kind of program where now this can be recognized in a way for medicinal purposes and ultimately, hopefully, replace some of these things that we have in the league.
I love that. Right. I love that. Thank you so much. Boo Williams, when did your journey with cannabis start?
Oh, man. I can go back far as high school. My journey went back to high school because, you know, we all deal with injuries and different mental things differently. And, you know, I went through a lot in high school. You know, long story short, I was expelled from high school and I had to attend college early. So therefore, I was going through a lot of mental, I could say, you know, some mental stress. And, you know, I was already using cannabis. So when I kept using it, it definitely gave me that relief. It gave me that, you know, that sense of, you know, I mattered. And at the same time, you know, it gave me a relief of, okay, slow the brain down. Now you can be able to put things in order because, you know, Mike, he'll tell you as an athlete, our brains go 100 miles per hour. So therefore we need, you know, cannabis to slow that part of the brain down and give you that yellow light where as athletes playing contact sports, we don't have a yellow light. It's only a green light. So when we do have, you know, cannabis for that yellow light to break us down and say, hey, stop. This is what the best thing that you should do, and then you go for it. So that's why, you know, I really indulged in cannabis because I seen really what it did for my mental health.
You're talking about is actually allowing you to be present in the moment. So rather than continuously running, running, some of the sativa and the indica strains have distinct properties to allow you to be present, to unlock that creativity, and to really enjoy the process that you're going through and find some appreciation for it. So I'm happy that it was able to do that for you, not only mentally, but physically improve some of those ailments you were dealing with well.
Oh, yeah. And it took me, like I said, I went to a mental health facility for it wasn't for athletes, but it was just a mental health facility in 2011. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I was very committed.
That's amazing. Let me ask you.
Yeah. I laid on the railroad tracks in two. Oh, go ahead. Because it got delayed.
No apologies. I wanted to follow up with that and ask about that and just the journey to that point and those sort of thoughts that actually finds yourself on a railroad track. Talk about that process and how you ended up in that position.
Excuse me. Well, at the time, you know, I was still trying to find myself, trying to figure out, you know, what was my niche in this world other than besides football. And I had a gym at the time, a sports performance gym. But as Mike can tell you, we're athletes, we're used to going towards something. And when you have a gym, you're waiting on people to come in. And that was just something that was, you know, weighing on me because it was something I felt like I should be doing more with my time and with, you know, the work I put in of all these years in football. So at the time, me and my kid's mom, we went through a little slight breakup. And then, you know, it was a thing where she let me see my kid. And, you know, that sent me in a whirlwind. And it was something I never experienced before. And it just took me for a loop. And I found myself on the railroad tracks. And some homeless people saved me. Matter of fact, it was homeless people that I gave clothes to before at the New Orleans Mission. Yeah, it was homeless people I gave clothes to before.
You knew that couple prior to that?
When I was laying down, they were pulling me up by my shirt and, you know, it was talking to me and they started walking me back towards the road. But it didn't dawn to me that they were calling my name. But, you know, until halfway on the journey back to my friend's house and I asked them, I said, how do you know me? How do you know my name? And it didn't dawn to me that I'm Boo Williams staying in New Orleans because it was June. It was hot. I was disoriented. But they told me, they said, you gave us these clothes we have on. At the New Orleans Mission weeks before.
Look how life comes full circle, right?
Full circle. And then they walked me back to my friend's house, and I'm sitting on my friend's couch crying my eyes out like, man, I need to talk to somebody, I need to see somebody. And at the time, I couldn't get you know, the correct cannabis that you would need, because they had this thing called spice that was out there too. So it was, you know, living in Louisiana, you can't get things like you wanted to. So, you know, having that was really messing with my mental. And the Khloe Kardashian show comes on, Lamar Odom and Khloe. And his friend Jamie was real depressed. He was sitting in the house, he wasn't shaving, he wasn't handling Lamar's business. And I'm looking at the show like, man, this is me. This is me. And then I picked up the phone and called him, the same place Lamar's friend went to, because he went to the show, he came back, he was a different person. He was different mentally, and he was different physically. And so I called him up, and 2 weeks later, I was there at the same place, and I was supposed to stay for 30 days, and I ended up staying for 8.5 months.
Wow, that's a real inpatient therapy.
Yeah, it was at a brain clinic called the Crosby Sports. I changed it to the Crosby Sports Treatment Center, because a year later, after I left, I developed a curriculum for athletes with neurocognitive issues. So, and since 2015, we service over 200 athletes.
Tell us your exact diagnosis, if you don't mind sharing.
Manic depression. I had insomnia for a little bit, and my eating, I can't eat really unless I do cannabis, because that part of the brain that tells me when to eat and gives me my appetite has been damaged from football. So, you know, it's a lot that's been damaged with me. But, you know, what I did was I put tools in my tool belt. And when you go to a treatment center, they're giving you the tools to deal with everyday life. And so what you should do is just put those tools in your tool belt. So when you feel these emotions coming up, you feel these different things coming up, you know, you can be able to pull out, you know, this tool and say, hey, this is what works for this. This is what works for this. And I just found that, you know, adding cannabis to the treatment really helped these athletes that were 300 pounds, 280 pounds. It would help them, you know, get their feelings out amongst their peers. So when they got towards their one-on-one sessions and their group sessions, now it was easier for guys to, you know, talk to their doctors and therapists, because they sat down and got it out with their players.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, Mike, mm-hmm. I want to bring you into this conversation, and some of the things that Boo mentions. Does this sound familiar? Did you ever go through some of these same sort of injuries? I know yours was an ankle injury. Did you ever feel any of these trauma injuries as well?
Yeah. So, Boo hit it right on the head. I retired from concussions. So, you know, I broke my ankle, and that's what kind of pushed me into cannabis. But concussions is what I retired from. So dealing with all those diagnoses the same way. I mean, talking about that wellness program using cannabis, that's something that's what I presented to the league with Dr. Sue Sicily and my lawyer as well. It was more of a vestibular therapy, cognitive therapy, behavior therapy. And as well as, you know, I need a form of medication to also help me. Those same problems I deal with constantly to this day, lack of appetite, anxiety, depression, you know, mm-hmm. and like Boo said, having a toolbox, you know, I've sought out my own therapy and still in therapy to this day, but having a toolbox to be able to manage all those things is so important. You know, that's what I really was trying to articulate to the league was, you know, you leaving guys out here with no sense of opportunity, with no plan. And me, I was a child of the substance abuse. I grew up in a low-income community. So I got to the NFL I wasn't equipped with a lot of things. My mother had passed by the time I was 19. So by the time I got to the NFL, I didn't know the likelihood of athletes being becoming addicted to an opiate. I didn't know it was four times more likely than the general population because of the injury rate and the access. I didn't know being a child of substance abuse would affect me even greatly. And not having any education on all those things was even more detrimental. So, you know, there needs to be something along the lines of what Boo said, along the lines of what I challenged the league on, some form of wellness program for your mental, physical, and, you know, everything to wrap around for you can be complete when you leave this game.
You know what? It's funny that he says that because the NFL tried to shut our athletes' treatment center down and stop paying for guys' treatment. Now, we know we all have hit Cigna healthcare. So when I went, it paid $96,000 for my treatment. Now, note, at the time, 5 years after you're out of the league, your insurance lapsed.
Right.
So that's when they do, that's when they, the doctors do their experiments. It reevaluates on players to know that 5 years after you're finished, that's when your body and your brain starts to break down.
Right.
So therefore, we're going to remove ourselves from your insurance, so we're not liable.
Won't be able to be eligible to be involved in the studies for post-concussion injury to see the long-term management at the 3, 5, and 10-year mark. So they're automatically excluding you, which skews their data, right? It's going to skew their data because the true candidates like Boo and Mike will not be involved in those studies.
No, not at all. And that's why we dealt with the Amen Clinic. You know, I dealt with Dr. Amen up in Costa Mesa. He's seen all of our athletes. And I went to the Tom Brady Deflategate hearing. And I took 8 players to that hearing. And as soon as Tom Brady walked in, I held up a NFL investigation case number, because they were trying to stop us from getting treatment. And we all know that we pay for that Cigna healthcare. We should be able to go wherever we want to go. And it paid $96,000 for my treatment. So now when I turn it into an athlete treatment center, you don't want to pay for guys' treatment to get them healthy, and you don't have nothing put in place for them. So I fought it to the death, and you know, we back open. And like I said, the cannabis aspect really helped a lot, because guys now can feel, you know, they, like you said, they can feel in the moment instead of, you know, all these racing thoughts going through their head.
Right. And Boo, is there, you speak about this and sort of the action you took with this presentation with Tom Brady, but is there sort of a group, more of a collective with some of these ex-athletes, sort of you and Mike, and is there sort of a bigger collective where you guys can put together sort of a unified front?
I think so, because we're all connected in this industry together. We're all in so many different lanes of this industry. Like you've seen the commercial that we did with Netflix, you know, talking to Roger Goodell. We had a meeting with him. And, you know, I think that was around about the time that, you know, Mike was doing, you know, what he was doing. And we were really trying to come at it from all these different angles and let them know that this plant is something that players and athletes been using for the longest. You know, if you really want to be technical, this is how we're staying on the field. You know, it's not your narcotics that you're feeding us, because a lot of guys don't take the narcotics. You know, I got 2 refills of 100 morphine pills for my Achilles, but I didn't take them. So it's a lot of guys that don't take them, but it's a lot of guys that do fall subject to that. And that's why we do what we do, so we can be able to give those guys an outlet.
First of all, 100 tablets of morphine, any kind of MS cotton at any given time in one dosage or one, you know, examination is ridiculous. So the fact that they're more comfortable.
They gave me 2 refills of 100.
More comfortable with pushing pills on you than they are with a natural substance like cannabis to help medicate, to help treat you, to help with your overall and total wellness, not just physical, but mental as well. Because as we all know, as we're recovering from any kind of injury, there's a mental component. And that strength and resilience is what's going to help carry you over the edge to recover quicker and faster and more effectively.
Because if Andrew Luck was probably using cannabis, he probably would still be in the league. Am I right, Mike?
Yeah, maybe so. Yeah.
But you gave a statistic earlier, I saw, Boo. What do you estimate the number of NFL players now that use cannabis currently?
Oh, it's probably like 90-95, because Mike can tell you almost every player uses some form of cannabis. And it shocked me when I got to the league, because I didn't know how the league worked, or, you know, I went on a team with Ricky Williams. and me and Rick, I got caught on my drug test my second year in the league with Ricky, and Ricky was like, hey, man, They're not going to test you doing training camp. They're going to test you doing mini camp. And they tested me and they got me. And it was a thing of, they treated me like I was a real criminal. They treated me like I was, like something was really wrong with me, not because of my injuries and what I was going through, but something was wrong with me because I wanted to use cannabis. And that was a big issue and a big problem. And, you know, you in the program for 2 years, you can't drink alcohol or smoke cannabis. They test you randomly. So they have you feeling like a criminal.
Right. And was that your Ricky Williams voice, boo?
Yeah, that was my Ricky voice.
Ricky, know I hear his voice all the time, man. Ricky
said, hey, man, your last name Williams like mine. They're going to test you during training camp, not mini camp. And then at mini camp, they called my name, and I looked at him, and he was like, my bad.
The stigmatization. Yeah, go by position. It's crazy. That's crazy.
But you know what? Who would have thought that Ricky Williams, Kyle Turley, and myself will all be in the cannabis industry using our platforms to do great things, and we all played on the team together, same team together.
Wow. Mike, so as we talk about sort of this testing, the rigors you guys went through, what would you, if you were Roger Goodell, if you were sitting in that seat, what kind of policy would you have today?
Well, first, I would bring in people that were smarter than me, that would know more about the plant, that would more know about bringing in and enforcing policies like this. And I would bring them in, I would consult, and I would find the best ways possible to give my players the best ways to stay on the field. I mean, if I'm Goodell and I'm the commissioner of the league and I have a responsibility to the owners of the team, I got a responsibility to the players. Well, then, I mean, my responsibility is to keep the product as healthy and as best as I can. So me getting the best research and giving them the best opportunity to do that and allocating the funds towards the right things, I think is the smart thing to do. And if I was him, that's what I would do.
I love that. Because honestly,
and boo,
we can't do it by ourselves. There needs to be a conglomerate. And there are too many resources to not have the specialists in every aspect that the plant is involved in.
Exactly.
Weighing in and giving the most up-to-date research, scientific expertise in order to support that effort. Boo, what do you think the policy should be?
Yeah.
Well, first, I think they need to get rid of that so-called thing called independent doctor that they have for the NFL, because that is out the window. Because we have so many different injuries, and you go to see their doctors, and their doctors are telling you nothing's wrong with you. But you go into your doctors that have nothing but everyone's best interest, and they're going to show exactly what's going on with you. They're going to pinpoint it, what's going on with you, and they're going to show you how to deal with what you've got going on. But their doctors don't want to do that as of, I said lately, because I don't know if you've seen the article, but they had an independent doctor that was turning players down on their benefits. And this is how guys really go off the deep end, because you keep telling us something's not wrong with us. But then when we go to all these other different doctors and we're feeling these emotions and feeling these different things and going through so much, and they're telling us what's going on with us and you're not, that's a problem. And that's why they got to get rid of that independent doctor, because they had a guy, and you can look it up. You were supposed to be eligible for a disability. You had to grade out at a 27%. Well, you would grade out at 27%, but what he would do is dock 2 points because he said you had no pain. Now, how could you dock points from me and say I had no pain if I told you what's an MRI on my body that was hurting me? So that's what the league was doing, and turning guys down for their disabilities. And you can look it up too, is they had, it were the African-American players were the lowest of getting their disabilities. Well, how are we the lowest of getting our disability when you're 80% of the league? That don't make sense. So, you know,
so it's all an effort to save money. That's what the league is doing. They're trying to save money. So what Boo is saying is disability is long-term benefits from the agency, from the NFL. also governmental disability. So if you cannot be determined clinically disabled, you can't reap any of those benefits. So the fact that they are making it just short enough that you're unable to acquire and qualify for disability under those guidelines that are determined by the NFL, then you're falling short of losing out. When you tap out and your season is done and you're ready to retire, or you're ready to walk away from the league because you've had too many injuries or too many concussions or too many, you know, problems, you can't reap any of the benefits in order to be.
And then you have guys doing what they're doing on the fraud scheme or the things of trying to go through the fraud way of getting their money and setting them up for the failure, because there's no way that these guys can do this much fraud when it comes to the disability stuff and you not catch it the first time. You let it go through, so therefore it can be something that, hey, we can have a bigger punishment with these guys. Really, the punishment should be on the league, is because this is what they're making players do, because you won't qualify them, the ones that are qualified for the disability.
That's interesting, Boo, because we've seen this play out in the NFL and most recently in the NBA. So you think that there are some other issues involved there, not simply what we see in the reports on SportsCenter?
Way bigger issues. Way bigger issues. Mike can tell you it's way bigger issues. That's why I love to see what we're seeing with the quarterbacks now. Your top quarterbacks are your African-American quarterbacks. Therefore, now when you have certain issues come up, these quarterbacks are going to fight for rights, because previously your quarterbacks were white and they didn't get in issues. And when it's, you know, when it's a regular player just talking about issues, you look like the disgruntled player. But when the quarterback speaks, everybody's antennas go up. That's why they tried to keep it from these quarterbacks, like, you know, who is it, like Deshaun Watson and, you know, Kyler Murray, all these guys that are coming up and their top quarterbacks are African-American. You cannot ignore the issues that are going on, because these guys are going to address it. As before, the other quarterbacks wouldn't address it.
And speak to this, Mike. You, both of you guys, I hear you talk about having a toolbox and being prepared when you know, issues may arise and how important that is for you in a wellness program. Beyond you two, is there something being done, something in place for other ex-NFL players to tap into these types of resources?
Well, since I retired, I began to learn of new programs like Boo's program and different other various ones, you know, outside of non-sport ones, if you will. But there's nothing that I've seen that the NFL has delegated themselves. There's nothing that I've seen that they said. I know they allocated $100 million to player health and wellness. And I'm pretty sure out of that $100 million, there can be some type of program, a selection of doctors that's responsible enough to come in and speak on these things, physicians and so on and so forth. They can come in and create a program. So I haven't seen anything that the NFL has delegated, you know, from their standpoint, but I have seen independent programs and programs that players have started and players have recommended because of this spread of just irresponsibility, you know, throughout the years.
Right. Yeah.
The resources that you guys are sharing on this platform here today and with all of the mentorship that you do, every time you speak, someone's listening. Whether it's a player, whether it's a high school player, a college player, someone else is battling what you're going through. Your stories are powerful. So you sharing this information allows everyone to take advantage of your personal experience and then turn that around and see how they can utilize that to do better on their next step. So we appreciate it.
Appreciate it. And that's why we do it. You know, we do it because, you know, it takes real courage to tell your story. It takes real courage to go out there and say, hey, this is what happened to me. These are the things that I went through. You know, it wasn't all pretty. You know, I was at the lowest point, you know, and not everyone is capable and able to do that and have their story resonate with everybody. And, you know, it takes the strong players to come out and do this type of thing, because we know when you do things like this, you know, you're going to get some backlash. You're going to get, you know, all the, you know, all the bad things that come with it. But you know what I do is I'm so involved in community service through the cannabis community, to where you can't say anything bad about this industry, because all it is the helping, loving, caring, sharing industry. And we all want to see each other get well. And you can't deny that. And we have that access through so many channels of this plant, whether it be hemp home building, whether it be, you know, CBD, whether it be THC, or whether it be, you know, cooking with cannabis. And so it's so many different avenues of this plant that we're using our platform to show people, like, hey, the information that you got prior was absolutely wrong. And we're here to show you and educate you on this plant. So therefore you won't be missed. So you won't be uneducated about it. So, you know, we just want to use our platform to do good.
Absolutely. Mike, tell us a little bit about Lion Order and tell us how you connected with that brand, why it's important to you, and what made you really invest that time to get to the next level with them.
Yeah. So, it's something that, culturally, it's something that speaks for itself. Lion Order by Rohan Marley. Rohan has been an entrepreneur of the family for so many years, and now he's getting into cannabis. He's a university alumni. I am as well. We met through a close connection that we have. You know, we sat down, we talked about a lot of different things, and just spoke about, you know, these things, player health and wellness, athletes having an opportunity, men of African descent being able to get in this space and do well for themselves. So he brought me on as vice president, and now I'm serving that position. And it's been very educational. I've learned a lot throughout this process. And, you know, it's been something that for me, I've had dream jobs, you know, like the NFL is my first job. And now this is kind of not a job, but an opportunity. So just now being a part of what Ro's doing and his higher level consciousness and that family and all the great things they brought to the plant, and now being able to spread that love and consciousness around the world as his father did, you know, is something that's very important to me and us as a team.
And there's no bigger name in cannabis than Marley in my eyes.
And you see that smirk? You see that smirk? Mike got with it. If anybody know Rohan, when you talk about Rohan, you got to have a little smirk laugh on your face. Because he brings so much energy, man. He brings so much energy, love, and peace. And, you know, he is one thing about Rohan, if you know him, he loves that plant, man. He loves that plant with all his heart. And he's going to express it every time he see you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So being able to bring that to life for him, us and the team, we're excited to do that. And just to be a part of, you know, his energy and what that family has brought to the world. I mean, it's humbling.
I love it. I love it. But speaking of the Marleys, I saw recently some of your advocacy work, Boo, with Damian Marley and Tidal. Talk about that experience. And that was a very open and sharing expression. So please talk a little bit about that.
Oh, man, that was a great experience, man, to be contacted about Damian. For his Medicated album, it really put a light on, you know, the plant and really what it does for everyone's health, and just to tell my story so that therefore he can put it on his video and help others. You know, I've been in this space since 2013, and you know it's been an uphill battle and fight for me. You know, I was doing the video with Damian Marley at the same time I was trying to create my cannabis brand. I had a bad breakup with, you know, my kid's mom, and I said, you know what, I'm going to pursue this other dream and my purpose, and I gave her everything, and I stayed in my car for 2 months building my business plan. I stayed in my friend's garage for another month, kept building my business plan and working up in the industry and doing research and development and going on, you know, stuff like Netflix and the thing with Damian Marley, and just working my way up until I hit a big consulting deal and put money right into my CBD business. And I think it was like 9 months later, a year later, a company by the name of LVGI came by and acquired my company. And, you know, I staying in the state of Florida, you know, they have millions of dispensaries here. But Mike can probably tell you, it's so hard for us to even get in the dispensary. And it's like, they want you to speak, they want you to come do this, they want you to come do that. But when it comes to putting your brand and your product in that dispensary, it's a no-go. So, you know, that's why we deal with a lot with the Black Farmers Associations and stuff like that. So we can open up doors for people of different ethnicities to get in this industry. Because if you're going to take people to jail for this plant, you have to open up the door, the legal door, for people to make an honest living and to medicate safely.
Right.
So, you know, that's why I'm in it.
And remember, the Black Farmers Association was supposed to be allocated one license, at least one license in the state of Florida. And the program's been in operation for almost 5 years now. We're going on 4 into 5 years, and that still hasn't been done.
Truly, yeah.
Still is the major stakeholder for the most dispensaries, over 90 in the state of Florida.
And the Black Farmers Association
hasn't even gotten one.
I'm not going to say what I'm supposed to say about that True Leaf situation. But, you know, it's a shame that people can operate and go through this industry in that way. And people that are doing it the right way and really doing it for the right reasons can't even get in. And, you know, I was approached by Kim a long time ago when they had one dispensary. They didn't know what they were doing. And it was, you know, we'll bring you in, and because I'm from Tallahassee. Their first dispensary was here. I'm the hometown hero here.
Yep.
That makes sense, don't it? But not to them. It's all because, like I said, it's the good old boy system, and we have to break that out of Florida. The good old boy system, we have to take that out, because it's killing people from opportunity that can have one.
Yeah. It's excluding our race.
Right.
Period.
Yep. Because who can have $90,000 for the license? And if you own the grow, you own the dispensary, you got to own the grow.
Yep.
So these are ways that's designed to take certain people out and to keep other people in.
Yeah. It's constant repetitive behavior.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because Mike can tell you, they want you to come and speak. They want you to come do this. They want you to come do that. But when it comes to putting your brand in their shop, oh, they get blind and amnesia. I don't know what you're talking about. But that's why we're coming in and kicking in the door, because we're kicking in the door and asserting ourselves in this industry, because we're the ones, like I said, we're the ones that if you put it on TV and it shows every player that's getting suspended for marijuana, he's getting suspended for this and this for that. Well, no, this is a lane. It's an opportunity now for guys to get in the industry, find out what it's useful for, so now they can heal themselves. But if you don't allow us to do that, then, you know, that's a problem. So that's one uphill fight we're battling.
Absolutely. And just to piggyback on that, because I think we're clear on sort of some of the major issues in access and entry point. Do we have any solutions? What will be the solution to sort of battle some of these obstacles that's placed in front of entering market, as you mentioned?
Easy. Just open the door.
Kick in the door,
so we don't have to go through the side door.
You said just open the door.
That's either one. It's either one, because, you know, I grew up in the community, and that's why I built a community, a nonprofit that goes into these communities through the Cannabis Network to help and do health fairs, to help, you know, individuals obtain their license, and to bring in the education and to go in and bring supplies to certain communities that need it. And that is our way of opening that side door. So now when it's time to come through the front door, you're going to open the door for me, because you already see what my intentions are, because we have to show what our intentions are first before we can even show up to the door.
Got it.
And it shouldn't be like that, but it's certain things that we have to do.
All right. So Mike, to finish up and kind of put a cap on this, piggyback on all the things that we were discussing, we always like to end with, what does Free the Culture mean to you?
Well, free the culture mean to me just a higher collective consciousness. We all have to, like Boo said earlier, we talked about getting into the industry. I talked about the way I kind of then got into the industry. I'm kind of more Malcolm X than Martin Luther King, you know, so when it comes down to asking help from those who never wanted to help you in the first place, that's kind of not my thing. So when it comes down to us being able to get into the industry and freeing the culture or freeing, you know, whatever the plant for us, it has to be a collective strategic thing, you know, so it has to be a higher consciousness of us coming together to understand that we're on the same team here. We fighting the same fight every single day, not only in this plant, but from housing to social stability to, you know, just being safe every day in our neighborhoods, from even the financial gap. So, I mean, it has to be a collective strategic, team effort to come together to free ourselves, and we can go from there. So it'll just be a high level of consciousness. That would be my answer for sure.
And Boo, the same question to you. What does free the culture mean to you?
Man, my boy, he topped it off. That's exactly what it means. You know, everyone just coming together, man, and knowing that it's not a white thing, it's not a black thing, it's all of us in the same boat, the same pot, because we all deal with the same stresses. We all deal with the same issues. And if we can, you know, keep that in mind, that we're all dealing with the same things, then this industry can be exactly what it's supposed to be, fun-loving, caring, sharing. You know, and like I said, if anybody sees Rohan, this is what the industry is supposed to be like. You know, he's an example of what the industry is supposed to be like. And that's called, you know, being free and being to where you can medicate freely without, you know, being told what you should take. Because think about it. How many people take medicine from the pharmacy and don't even look what's in that medicine? They just take it. They just take it. So therefore, with this plant, we need to be able to have more than just say, hey, we're going to give you this pill bottle and take it. No, we have education to back it up. We have, you know, all these different resources. And basically, that's just what it is, man. Just coming together, using your resources, coming together for one common goal. And that's just to be medicated, safely medicated.
I wanted to ask you, Mike, you had mentioned earlier about buying black in the industry. Do you feel that there's a good black collective amongst cannabis right now? Do you feel like people are sharing their steps, their knowledge, their interests, how they get on? I don't see that as much. We talk a lot about individually breaking in the door, but we don't talk about collectively how to do that.
Right. And that's the thing, you know, I would say throughout my years of being in the industry, I've seen independent forces, you know, really trying to bring us together and buy black and understand that we need a space and create social equity in new states and new territories and things like that. But I can't say I really haven't, because Leo Bridgewater in New Jersey and a lot of people he worked with have, you know, made a lot of efforts. Eugene Monroe as well has tried to set up some things as well. So I am starting to see that more and more. I would like to see it more. I would like for us, you know, to continue to do things like this, to speak out, to spread our word, to let other African descent and people of color let us know, hey, that we're out here, we're willing to help. There's resources, there's ways, not only mentally, financially, however you need, socially, whatever you're trying to do, there's options, there's ways to help us in a collective manner. So I would like to see more, but I have seen a few, and I will do more on my end to push that out more, like reposts and things like that. So therefore, there can be more information out there.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, we really appreciate you guys. This is an amazing conversation. And I'm going to take away the key word today has to be collective. Right? whether your fight against NFL and trying to bring these ex players and demanding their rights. And then there's a bigger necessity there for a collective, and that's for kicking in the door in this cannabis industry and making your voice heard. So again, really, really appreciate you guys always sharing your story, removing the stigma, educating us. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Thank you.
Of course.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for letting our story be heard, man. We really appreciate it.
Perfect, perfect. And this is Leaf Style. Leaf Style, no longer a subculture, a Leaf Style. Thank you, guys.